Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today, I thought we'd focus on you and focus on how we can take your talents that you have, and you have talents, whether you recognize them as talents or not is completely up to you, and find a project that you can do to really kind of sharpen your skills, get them maybe, get the dust blown off. If you're really hot at what you do, well, maybe there'll be a second half to this where we can really get into what you can do if you're advanced. But I think most people that are hot on their skills, I always start an episode about 2 minutes before the ice cream truck comes here. It's kind of creepy. There's a clown driving it, right? I always think Buckethead and Primus are going to start playing really fast. But depending on your age, you've got either two sides of the hemisphere. Where'd your hemisphere today instead of a coin? Yesterday, I used coins a lot. Either you're young, and therefore your skills aren't completely perfected because you're young. You're still working on them. All I can say is, yes, go, go, go. You'll never have more fun in your life entering the work sector with a skill that you love to do. And I don't care what it is. Don't look over your shoulder to see if it impresses the guy next to you, the girl next to you. It is all that you need. If it makes you happy, does no harm, usually quite the opposite, you're ready to rock and roll. But now let's say you're in your 30s or above. You used to do this thing all the time, or you almost started doing this thing. And just pretend like I am talking directly to you this whole episode. Don't imagine me with someone else. You had this thing you used to do, and you know, maybe you had 1 week that you did it professionally. Maybe you had 6 months, maybe you had a year, maybe you had a few years. Maybe you've never done it professionally, but damn it, it's a thing that keeps gnawing at you. And deep down inside, you know you can do it. You just need to make the time. Now here's the challenge. This is how yours truly gets through these phases. I'm going to give you a couple stories. I keep saying in episodes that I started a video game company. 2005, I founded a company. Okay. Here's a funny thing. I've been through all kinds of different things. You know, I represent my career as having worked for one company during a particular year. But the reality is I got my own company selling software that I wrote. I'm working for this game company. I'm working for this database company. I'm a consultant to various individuals. My life has almost never been, I wake up, I go to work, and it's just that company. In the mid-90s, about 1995, I had become one of the best database coders on the planet. And the product that I was programming in was being completely usurped slowly, ever so slowly, by the internet by 1995. For those of you who know the history, you've got about 2 years of HTTP web pages being invented from 93, 94. So by 95, things are heating up. I mean, by 1995, you couldn't buy a book on how to program on the internet. O'Reilly Publishing was just getting started. They had a Perl book, which I still have. And it doesn't say anything in it. It's like Perl CGI or CGI programming, and it doesn't say anything. It's basically promising you that they're writing the book that you really want to buy. That's how freaking early this was. But of course, I know tons of geniuses in the Bay Area, and so one, I said, you know, I want to make a chat room, and this dude said, okay, you got to meet my friend. You work with so-and-so, yeah, and you got to meet him and talk to him because he'll help you out. He'll write the first one, then maybe you can modify it. He never completely wrote the first one. He went off to AOL and supposedly made a gazillion dollars. I went to his house afterwards. He was in a gated neighborhood with probably like an acre and about four cars out front. So he did well. So I'm at work and I need to learn the internet. My boss comes in to me, you know, pulls me into his office and says, you're going to program an email package, an FTP app. We're talking full-blown email package with, you know, all the progress bars, which is why POP3 protocol exists. You're going to do a web server, a web client, just boom, 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 a million different things. And I said, I don't know how to do that. And he goes, I'll teach you. It's easy. And he started just writing on the, and it was so easy. It was so ridiculous. But now, that's not true internet programming. It was programming in our custom language to access the internet, to deal with the protocols, like our language and then their language, da 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 da. Okay. So I went home, and this is what this episode's all about, and I created myself a project. I figured out how to buy a domain name. I bought cardgames.com. And my buddy and I were collecting Star Wars cards made in the mid-90s from Decipher Card Game Company, which no longer exists, but these things were beautiful. And then I worked out a deal where I could do a distribution deal, and I was buying Magic the Gathering cards and then the brand new Decipher Star Wars cards, and I was selling them online. I mean, I got the credit card machine in my house for $1,500 in 1995 or 96 eventually. Well, here's the thing. I didn't know how to program HTML. There were no websites out there on this subject, but I created a project. I don't know where I got my knowledge, honestly, to this day, but I programmed the website. If those of you go to archive.org, type in cardgames.com and go to 1996, and you can see this horrific website I created way back in the day. But I'm also an artist, so I needed to figure out how to make things look stunning. There was a guy named Dr. Ozone online. This guy was creating the most incredible, glassy, amazing buttons, and he was just phenomenal. So you go to his thing, and you'd read all the instructions on how to use Photoshop to make it happen. And Photoshop's barely changed since then, folks. 22 years ago. And it works. It worked, but it was meticulous. It took hours and hours to make every single glassy button, and the plugins really hadn't arrived yet. So I'm pushing my career on the artistic side, and I'm pushing it on the programming side. I'm working with this guy, John, who's kind of helping me out, but he's really busy, and eventually he just kind of dumped the project about 80% done, and so I went in there, figured out the code in Perl, and got the chat room going. I figured out HTML and got the cardgames.com going, and I bought stimulate.com and stimulus.com. I still own Stimulus, and I created like a Facebook sort of thing, okay, for artists and people to find artists, sort of like a, you know, like a nice art district online with the chat room. Eventually, I made a Prince chat room, and that's the one that, I think it's Arista Records. It's the one that picked it up and put it in their circulation. But now here's the thing. My company is doing extremely well up to the point the internet had essentially convinced all the companies of the world to stop doing like 4GL programming, which is a layer on top of the database that you might be dealing with, Oracle Sybase. I know this gets a little technical, but just ignore it. My company was going out of business because the internet was taking over. A bunch of people in my company never went and learned the internet. By 1997, I jumped ship to a company that wanted what's called a webmaster. What's a webmaster versus what you find today? A webmaster is truly someone who knows everything about the code, front and back, and everything about the art and the layout. So the programming to lay it out, as well as how to make any graphic anywhere. Here's the thing. I'm making a ton of money as this other type of coder. I changed industries completely on one day, and didn't lose a dime in salary. So I stepped off from pro golfing to pro football, theoretically speaking. Or I could have been pro golfing to, you know, running a department chain or something. I don't know. But I didn't lose any money. And the way I survived that was that I didn't sleep. I needed to learn this technology because that was an imperative. And I'm going to give you a couple that weren't imperatives that turned out beautiful for me as well. But it was giving myself a project that made learning fun. Because if I had sat there and just said, oh my God, I got to learn how to make a web page, but I don't know what I want to make. So there's no purpose, right? When you want to make something look pretty, well, then there's a bunch of cause and a bunch of purpose and there's a standard and you have to meet and all this other stuff, right? This is what we're going to do for you with whatever skill you have. And I want you to start thinking about it right now. Dig that little annoying thing that you've been repressing because it pains you to think about how you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Let's get that out, blow it off. You're in a safe room. Don't worry, right? As this chemtrail blocks the sun for another second. Now, fast forward a little bit. Eventually, I get so knowledgeable about the internet, the on and off work that I'm doing with Electronic Arts goes full time, 100%. I start running the web department. Talk about making money. Talk about having fun. Talk about building something absolutely legendary. By 2002, I had participated in architecting and building with all my employees and the other departments a $320 million gaming platform. I think to this day it still has the directory structure that I laid out in a meeting in 1999. Okay? A lot of brilliant people. You know, lifted a lot of stuff, but I'll tell you what. We were stuck in the water with a $2.5 million a month consultant that couldn't engineer their way out of a paper bag. And yours truly walked in the room at 29 and said, "What's taking so damn long? Here's how we do this." Boom, 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 boom. Laid it all out. Any questions? None. Walked out of that room and it finally started getting made. Just unreal. But now how was I able to do that at 29 years old with a whole room full of guys in their 30s and 40s and some in their 50s? Because I had projects. Stimulus.com, card games, which I eventually sold to this guy for a couple grand. The projects got me through the learning curve. Now fast forward to 2004. I'm here at this house now. I've been here a year. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. You know, the dot-com bust was happening. You know, over 80% of the world was not on the internet. I'm an internet professional and I can't find a job. Unbelievable. One of my old employees from Electronic Arts calls me and he had moved down from the Bay Area as well. And he lives in North LA. And he's like, "Man, I got a gig to make video games and I'm running out of resources. I can't do them all. Can you do one for me?" I'm like, "Well, what are we doing here?" And he says, "We're making games in Flash." And I said, "Oh, I bought a book called Flash 4 Unleashed. It's been sitting on my bookshelf for a year. Let me, sure. Which one do we do?" And he mentioned one. I think it was called Seven Seas from PopCap. And I loved that game. I had played the real game online somehow through a Java app or whatever it was. And we're making video games. These games were destined for a Time Warner cable box, an ICTV platform. And so I cracked this book out. And of course, there's sample code online. And so I'm like, I'm super excited. I bought this book with the full intent to learn how to program in Flash a video game. Now, I've done a lot of animations up to this point. I even won a David Bowie website award, I think in 1999. Maybe 2000. I got the screen capture of it for Stimulus.com. So David Bowie and his team picked Stimulus.com. Isn't that cool? Part of, you know, it's the design, all sort of stuff. It's pretty beautiful. So I start reading this book, and I had a project all of a sudden. It's Seven Seas. I love Seven Seas. And the other thing was that they really wanted it to be super object-oriented. And at that point, you could program up to that point and not do object-oriented programming everywhere because the internet, you know, JavaScript wasn't OO yet, and at least we hadn't figured out how to really trick it to be that way. Now it's a cinch. So I get into it. I do it. It's kind of a Frankenstein version of the app, but it works great. They're able to release it. And then I called my partner and I said, look, my buddy, and I said, look, let's make a company here because we're going to make a lot more money if we have a C-Corp behind us and we get organized. And so he and I sat up all night looking for domains. You know, we kept thinking of company names and we throw it in as a .com. And if it was taken on the .com, we just said, screw it. We're not going to spell it funny. We're not getting a .net or some bullshit. Sure enough, we came up with one. Zero G Games Incorporated. I went to LegalZoom and got the C-Corp. By the way, never file for a corporation until you have a client that's going to pay you enough money to make your corporate fees every year if you happen to live in California or a state that has them paid for automatically, right? Because it's costly to shut them down. I keep the site up. It's just a fraction of what we did. So right now, as of 2018, I am resurrecting my knowledge in all electronics because I love electronics. I love dealing with these things. And, you know, in the end, it's all really simple. It's really simple. It's really just a bunch of code of simplistic things, and it depends on how you want to contextually bring it together is where the complication comes in, which is where your imagination takes over. I want you to remember this. So I bought, 5 years ago, whatever, an Arduino circuit. At least 5 years ago. And it's a little tiny circuit board about this big. It's a teeny tiny computer. And I just kept it in the box. I also bought some robotic expansion pack. I forgot to buy the original robot that's supposed to be attached to it and all this other stuff. So about a year ago, I had a reason to get into this because I'm getting into ASIC chip technology for a very specific purpose. But I know that I need a project. I know I got to buy some more parts. I no longer owned a soldering iron. I no longer owned a voltage meter. I hadn't delved into these chips in a really long time. There's constantly new companies. There's Adafruit out there. Adafruit, by the way, ladies, it's adafruit.com. If you want to see a powerful female kicking some serious, serious ass in the world, go look up Adafruit if you haven't heard of her. She's an MIT grad, but instead of getting her PhD thesis all worked out, she started selling Arduino kit parts. She'd build like a project with an Arduino, and then she'd list the parts and sell them in a bag and send them to people out of her apartment in New York. And eventually flipped that, and I think even less than 10 years, it's less than a decade old, she now has a $50 million a year company in a couple thousand square foot warehouse in Manhattan, New York. Like some of the most expensive real estate on planet Earth. This girl she's got pink hair, super chill, relaxed. She talks like a normal human being. She makes everything fun. I mean, she is truly just an example of the way it used to be. I'm going to make an episode on What's My Line, the old show from the 50s, and we're going to rip apart this idea that women were anything other than what this woman is for Adafruit. I forget her name. I think it's Lorem. Anyway, amazing. But I need a project. And so I'm going to keep a little secret what the project exactly is. But I've given myself an electronics project. No one's telling me to do it. I'm doing it. And it is a project that is so wide in scope that I'm going to be using virtually every single part that the Arduino line has at its disposal. And so I'm going to learn every little sensor, every little mechanism of everything. And I'm super excited, and I've been going at it now. It also happens to help me in other professional endeavors. So this is you. I wanted to give you at least 15 minutes of examples because I need you to understand it's fun. With YouTube, the level of do-it-yourself is off the chain, right? Even hacks, if you don't have a lot of money, they have cheap ways to get things done. In addition to my electronics project, I have discovered using the web a group that's close by. I think it's meetup.com or something like that, meetup.org. A group that meets weekly, maybe it's actually monthly, in my neighborhood, and I'm going to go meet them for dinner this coming next week, and I have all my questions all ready to go. I'm trying to do my best to do, you know, to answer my own questions such that I don't, you know, bore them to death. And so I'm working with others so I can speed this process up. So how do you make a project that is right for you? Just slightly a complex question. This may be as complex as it ever gets, which is fun, right? You want to create a project that meets a few requirements for you. The number one thing that your project has to do is super excite you about the final outcome. All right? And trying to think of how the best way to say this in a figurative way so that it applies to all of you with your various talents and your various desires. But it might be that you're creating something that no one's ever seen before. That's a good one. That's usually where I go. Inventing something completely brand new. The second thing is that you want your project to have, a fairly decent scope. However, you don't have to do that. I like that because then I know everything when I'm done. I know the majority of everything. I'll give an example. When I was a kid and I had my TRS-80 Coco color computer, I think I had a version 2. It came with this fold-out card, which had, it was probably about a foot wide, 8 inches tall, and it had every single command on front and back of this card, this little quadrifold card. And I would make a program that would use as many of those commands as possible, such that when I was done with the program, I knew how to use every command in the whole language. When I finally got to this program I wrote called KeyPaint, which if you guys go to cococentral.com, you can see a site that I keep up that will give you all your old TRS-80 manuals, emulators, cards, but I also put the KeyPaint program up there so you can just see some code I wrote when I was 15. It's a pain in the ass to get that code inside of an emulator. But it had everything. It had booting up, going into graphics mode, converting the keyboard presses into drawing on the screen. You could kick into font mode and type ABC through Z. Then when it came time to save, you could save with horizontal lines, vertical lines. It all had runline encoding built in, and it was great. So disk IO NO in out, which is a cassette tape, basically. You could read your drawing back from a cassette tape. Just sit there and draw it right in front of your face. It draws it back. Okay. But if a big scope freaks you out, then fine. Don't get freaked out. Make a teeny tiny app that just kind of digs into an area. You know, I'm going to create a little application where if I push the button, it makes a pixel on the screen light up. There. There's a lot of complexity in just that little tiny thing. You might get to a point where you're like, all I want to do is save. I'm just going to hit run on the application. It's going to save the text hello world into a file on my computer. Something teeny tiny like that. The cool thing is, unlike the 80s, you have the internet, and one of the neatest things you can do is if there is a book for sale for what you're trying to do, even non-technical things, of course, everything's technical, right? If I want to move a little palm tree to the front yard, there's technical requirements to get that done. One of the tricks is that you find a book that is on the subject that you're interested in. Now, again, YouTube has got everything. So you really, books are nice. I love books. They're nice to carry around. If you might want to carry a book in your backyard, not an iPad, I recommend it. But most books have sort of like sample things that you can download that come with the book, little companion things. For those of you who are coders, virtually every coding book has sample chapters that say, we're building this project, we're building a video game. Well, the freaking code's online for free at the publisher. Just go get the sample code. My only request is if the book changes your life, like Flash Unleashed changed my entire life. Made a bunch of people a ton of money. I bought the book, but I eventually thanked the author, you know. But if it works, Just buy it if you haven't bought it. Say a little thanks, right? But get clever. The internet is your friend. The amount of times that old people in their 40s and up call me up on the phone and say, well, how do I do this? And I said, well, you were capable of asking me with your voice, right? What do you mean? You're able to use words to ask me, right? Yeah. Well, type that into Google, would you? Oh, okay. Unbelievable. If you're young in this world, let me tell you, you're so fortunate in some ways. But now here's the thing. But you got to take this project. Let's say it's fairly extensive project, you know? I don't want to say hard, because if you love what you do, trust me, the pain of what you're doing may never show up, just so you know. But you may actually run into some issues. I'll give an example from my recent project that I've been working on, which has several stages, which is what we're about to get into. I needed what's called a multiplexer chip. And for those of you who never want to learn this stuff, all it does is it takes one wire from your computer and it turns it into 16 wires or 8 wires or whatever you're looking for. So it actually multiplies up the number of ports. And all you need to know is that the a power strip into a power outlet at your house, you know, you only got 2 on the wall, and you plug that power strip in and it gives you a 6, right? You put another power strip on the bottom, it gives you another 6. And so you've got 12 little power strips. It's the exact same thing, except it does it at a microchip level. All right. So I head off to my local electronics store. It's called Fry's. And I'm sitting in front of this wall of chips. And I'm like, I just need the so-and-so chip. And it's nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. They have a funky brand that just doesn't carry it. So I found one that was kind of similar. It said multiplexer on it. And it's super complicated compared to the ones that I'm supposed to be using. So I bring home the super complicated one. It only costs like $1.50. And I am trying to figure this damn thing out. I'm downloading the schematics online. I'm looking at this thing going, Jesus, I will figure this thing out. It took 4 days for yours truly to figure it out. But the way I figured it out was I looked at the ones I'm supposed to be buying, and I looked at this one, and I said, well, they're similar up to this point. And so I'm wiring this thing together, and I got LEDs attached to it, and it's supposed to be just one that can gate logic, right? So it's supposed to be 3 pairs of 2 LEDs. I just did red, green, red, green, red, green. It was a nice Christmas spirit thing. But they never would light up. And I'm like, son of a bitch. And so finally, one night, on the fourth night, it's probably 10 o'clock at night, I take the power out and I put it in one of the other pins, and boom, a set of 2 of them lit up. I was like, oh my God. Ran a couple more power lines to it, and sure enough, my logic is running, and then they're rotating their on-off switches, and I'm just like, holy shit, I figured this thing out. Cool. So you're going to have moments like that as well. Now, depending on what you're getting into, it is something that you love. Don't pick my stuff. Pick your stuff. I mean, if you dig my stuff, then let's do it together, right? But the idea is you want to do whatever the hell it is. You want to learn how to make surfboards. Like, I've seen these guys. They smoke weed all day. There's got to be something I can get into. I just got to buy the stuff, right? So probably the best thing you can do to start off is to figure out the subject matter. Try to do something where you can get an extensive understanding of what it is you're getting into. And try to chop it into smaller pieces, right? Again, if you wanted to be a doctor, and you're not anywhere near being a doctor, you know you've got 3 degrees you need to get. Within each degree, you have to chop it up into little pieces, right? Now, thank God, we're not talking about becoming a doctor, right? We're talking about fixing up old cars. We're talking about maybe doing some gardening. We're talking about becoming a master chef. We're talking about learning how to make clothing, maybe. Whatever floats your boat, man. You're going to be a big electronics guru, a big programmer, whatever it is. You want to build the next iPod in your frickin' house. Some drone that flies around and does something, right? See if you can phase your project. Phases are just stages. They're milestones. Well, phase one is just getting this thing figured out, right? And it might be that you need to actually acquire a lot of items in this world to really get done what you need done. But you don't have money, you don't have enough money to buy it all at once. That's fine. Before you spend all that money, a good investor would tell you, look, don't go and blow all that money on everything. Get a phase one in your brain and make sure that you get to phase one for as cheaply as possible and feel your heart. Feel if you're still into it, right? We're going to talk about the heart going through a wavering moment in the middle of your project too, because it's important that you don't lose steam and that you don't think that hardship is a sign from God that you should stop. It has nothing to do with that at all. The one thing I've learned from an investor, he had some brilliant things about him, which I really respect. He taught me that as a slave, I got this episode called Sovereign Slavery. It's about us convincing us that we're sovereign, that we're free, but we're actually still slaves. We think you need something, you go out and buy it, especially in the modern age. In the Midwest, not so much. You don't have a lot of money in the Midwest, and so you jerry-rig stuff together to get it done. And in the end, it's some of the most endearing stuff you'll ever be involved with, that you'll ever create. So what I can say is beg and borrow, don't steal. But use every utility in your home to get done the first phase of what you're doing before you spend a bunch of money. Because it's easy, right? There's a bunch of wives out there that know their husbands go out and buy everything to fix up a car, everything to work wood, and then they never use it again. You buy a bunch of exercise equipment and you don't do it. It's so overwhelming. You know, you got the Nautilus machines and all this other stuff, but it's just so huge, it overwhelms you. Instead of using, you know, I don't know, buckets of water to get your biceps going first, you know, whatever it is, you know, some old crappy weights. Earn the next level of equipment. That's what I try to do. Once you get the phase one complete, you'll start to feel amazing. But now let me give you a piece of advice from Ray Bradbury that I got directly from the guy back in the late 80s. 1989, as a matter of fact. He said, look, do not run around running your mouth, this I'm paraphrasing, running your mouth about the project you're getting into, about how great it's going to be to anyone else. Keep that all inside for the day that you finish. What he was talking about is being a writer. He said one of the common mistakes of novelists is that they come up with a great idea and they can't wait to get the prize for that good idea. And so they run around giving out premise notes and story notes. And they're like, this is going to be so great. It's going to be so huge. Big spaceship, big explosion. It's going to be a movie. It's going to be a three-parter. The problem is they're taking the piss on their project, as the British people would say. They are taking the steam out of it. All that energy that they needed in their chest and their heart to finish the novel, which is an ass-kicking process if you've ever tried it, or a film, and they blow it all on a little tiny reward that isn't real. Imagine giving yourself an Oscar the day you had the idea to write the script. You don't have anything on paper at all, but you go and get an Oscar and you just give it to yourself and you stand up in your living room to your family and you give the big acceptance speech. Well, you're going to really write that script now? You've already gotten the complete reward cycle of your concept. As they said in the old 80s rap, White Lines, don't do it. So if you've never done this before, it might sound easy, but it's actually kind of tough to hold it in. Hold in your excitement, right? Now, it might be that you have a family. It might be you have some friends, and they come in your circle. Now, I'll tell you what, there's nothing more exciting than being Willy Wonka. This is how I run my life. Because I adhere to, as best I possibly can, Ray Bradbury's notion. Every single time I've ever run my mouth about something that's going on in my life, it just totally disappears. It's amazing. It's like a law of the universe. But there's nothing cooler than, you know, being that guy that goes in, goes out, goes in, goes out. He's the only one that goes in. The Oompa Loompas are in there doing their thing, helping you out, which is your, like, imaginary muse. And then you walk out with it, you know. When I wrote the sequel for Tron, Legacy, my version of it, which I gave directly to the director of the first one, it blew him away. Completely blew him away. He's looking at me, he's like, I can't believe you wrote this. You know, gave it to my other buddy. He, you know, he blew his mind. He blew his mind. He loved it. That's the way you want it. Because even if you don't get your Oscar, it never gets made, at least you did it. People got entertained by it, right? Again, people will tell you that they have things that they love, and you go, well, what's your love? And like, oh, I love doing this. And again, it should be all over their world, right? Some form or fashion. A lot of things are computerized, so you don't necessarily print everything out. But you should have something. But this investor taught me that you can get a lot of stuff that you need without spending money. You can take I needed a soldering iron. I thought about, you know, getting $15 ones. I thought about, you know, asking a friend. But I know I'm going to need this thing for a really long time. I'm never going to be giving it back in the short term. There's a lot of advances in soldering. They try to get away from lead solder. They also, a lot of times, will make sure that you have the solder at a particular temperature. And the cheaper ones don't have any method of measuring temperature. You plug them in, they just hit a certain finite hotness. So I spent a little extra money, not much. And I got one that has a temperature gauge on it, so I can see what the hell I'm doing. Don't want to burn up a component. I mean, I don't be, you know, imagine it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I almost have this thing together. Oops, I forgot to solder that thing, and I get this thing way overheated, and I touch it, and it burns out the chip. Burns up the board. I don't want that. Components are not always right next door, right? Now, I'm going to caution you here. I've done this so many times that, for me, I like to pick projects that are big. Because in my mind, I can celebrate the little milestones all by myself, and I'm completely satisfied with my own accolades for doing stuff. You may want to pick a bunch of tiny ones, super tiny ones, just to get yourself started. But now I talk about that whole idea of celebrating your idea with the outside world. One of the things that I bumped into, probably in my 20s, that may or may not plague any of you, is celebrating too hard with yourself. Okay? What does that mean? What if you were sitting there for 10 years? If you're younger, 2 years, it'll feel like 10. And you're like, I think I can do this. I think maybe it's a guitar solo. That's all you want to do is play guitar solo. Whatever it is. And eventually you do it, right? All this time you've been doubting yourself or delaying because you don't want to fail, right? Very typical. Everybody has that, by the way. You're a musician. You used to make albums, but you never do anymore. But you're like, God damn it, I have at least 20 songs in my chest. I just need to get one of them out the door, and then that will give me the snowball to go down the hill. And you're correct. But there's one little thing that can set you off course. And I have done it a million times, okay? And I think guitar solos is one that I did. I did a guitar solo on a song way back in 1994, okay? And it really worked out. It took me a long time to get all the different techniques worked out and get a song going. And da, da, da. It's not amazing, but it's definitely worked out. Got some praise from my friends. But the problem was, is I, in my brain, said, I can do that now. And then my desire died off immediately. It was stupid. I hadn't really created a good one. But I allowed myself to take the praise from my friends and my own praise of, or really, my own praise goes like this. Holy shit, we actually did it, right? You never thought you could, but you did. And I never focused on it ever again. Ever again. Crazy. Oh, I write songs, melodies, all that kind of stuff. That is just something you got to do if you want to get into music, right? So be careful with underestimating yourself. Because the more you underestimate yourself, the more that you're going to give yourself jaw-dropping praise when the basics of life simply occur in front of your face. This is very common. Don't underestimate yourself at all. Any of that doubt you have, you know, I would say doubt is a bit like dust. What's dust do to your home? You have a bunch of cool stuff in your house. If you live by the beach and you open a window, you'll learn all about dust in a completely different way. We have this weird dust, and I don't know if it's from the sky. I think it's from the beach. We always have a good breeze going on, as you can hear in the microphone, most likely. And it fills up your house with this weird dust. Okay. Dust is supposed to be skin mites, but I guess in California it's dirt. Anyway, it gets all over the place. You know that if you dust and you wipe it all off, all of a sudden that stand you got your TV on, your TV, your computer desk, the kitchen, the corner down there by the door, all your molding in your house, it all starts to look what? Brand new and amazing, right? And then you start to realize when you dust, you're like, shit, this stuff has always looked amazing. It's just my lazy ass that lets dust get on it and make it look old. That's the reason why I feel like I live in a crap hole every once in a while. And dust is a weird thing. It's an interesting, analogy for life. It's sort of one of these things where you start to think you have lost track of your cycles and you need to step up to the plate to get this done. Because unless you have a maid, it ain't going to do itself, right? It's interesting. Well, your talents are just like the furniture in your house. It's still pristine underneath all this doubt / dust. We talk about blowing the dust off stuff. It's very real. You're blowing the dust off inside your head for the project that you want to do. Now, let me give you another little reality here. Some of you are going to have this and some of you won't. If you are doing anything in your life for the praise of others, brace yourself. It may never show up until the final product starts to really succeed. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say you live with your parents. And it's a very common thing to want praise from your parent, right? I never really lived for this particular thing, even though I've had my issues with my parents, like all other kids. But you may want it from your friends, your teachers, the public at large. The only thing you want to really get praise for is following your dreams and doing what you love. You want to be an inspiration to other people, trust me. For instance, if you wrote a song and you made some great lyrics and you made some great music around those great lyrics, that's usually how songs go, you know, completely one-hit wonder at a minimum. Now, there's some one-hit wonders that have the weirdest lyrics on planet Earth. But for whatever reason, a bunch of people loved your song and they bought the song. And you made millions of dollars. Hopefully, right? And you're going to travel the world being this pop star, rock star, rap star, whatever it is. And people come up to you, man, that song's so dope. That song's so amazing. Oh, my God, your drum solo is so great. Whatever, whatever, whatever. You're going to dig that, trust me. You're going to enjoy that. But after a while, that's not going to do it for you because that pattern of praise is going to just get old real fast. But there's going to be two other people that can come up to you about your work. There's actually three, but someone's going to come up to you and say, those lyrics that you wrote, my God, my life was in a really weird spot and I just needed those lyrics. Right? When I got a chance to tell Cool J how much breakthrough, which is what actually funny, Kanye West is starting to say he's had a breakthrough, which is funny. But Cool J's song Breakthrough gave me all the strength I needed to stay on target when I got to California completely by myself with no money. And he looked at me and he goes, you're the reason why I wrote these songs. For him, it was more the message, getting out to the kids and giving them confidence to get their dreams. He's only a year and a half older than me, right? But he touched me. One of my brothers from another mother, Bobby Blotzer from Rat. We've done, you know, Havasu trips together. And I remember one of the first Havasu trips we went, we had to fill up gas in the boat. And it's just he and I at the first day. And we pull up and we're putting this, you know, billion gallons in this boat. And we go inside the convenience store. And there's an older woman who's our age, working the cash register, and there's a younger kid at the end of the counter, and he's just sort of sitting there, and he's looking. And I'm thinking, okay, she may recognize Bobby. The kid definitely won't, because what is he like? He might have been between 18 and 22, somewhere in there. The woman didn't say anything. The kid's looking at Bob, and he's like, are you Bobby Blotzer? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, I just want you to know, I play the drums because of you. He goes, my dad played your albums all the time, and I heard your stuff, and I realized it was a little different than the rest, and he took me to some concerts, and he goes, I play the drums now because of you. I guarantee you that compliment meant a hell of a lot more than, I love your music. Who knows what that kid will do? He was young enough, he could be in the next band of his own volition, his own brand, his own genre. That's you. You will have a stage where you're the kid, and then you'll have a stage where you're Bobby, or Cool J, or whatever it is. You have no idea how it will touch the world. When the actress who plays Uhura, I apologize for not remembering her name, on Star Trek in the 60s, she was one of the first black females to have a commanding role in a series on television. I mean, they treat her with complete respect. She was a cornerstone to the operation of the Star Trek Enterprise. She's on the bridge. She's made up to look absolutely gorgeous. Her genetics didn't hurt either. But there's a famous story when she decided to quit before the show was over. And it went out in the press that she was going to quit in between seasons. And who walks up to her and says, don't you dare quit? None other than Martin Luther King bumps into her somewhere and pulls her aside and says, I hear that you're going to quit Star Trek. And she's like, yeah. And he goes, why? She goes, well, I'm a singer, dancer. I love Broadway. And I don't think this TV thing is really doing it for me. And he says, you can't quit. And she says, why? And he says, because Star Trek is the only television show I allow my children to watch. And I let them watch it because you were on the show. I want them to see not only a black person be powerful on the show, but a black female be powerful on the show. And so she stayed on the show. Again, you could be Uhura in your own way, in your own domain. So I want you to take your dreams seriously. I want you to take your endeavors seriously. Everyone, you know, we throw around this phrase all the time that you have a talent, that God gave you a talent. I believe that 1,000%. But sadly, a large majority of the population is never told that statement. And they don't have it backed up by someone to say, no, it's not a joke. It's not a little aphorism for you to feel good about yourself. It is real. And so let's find it, let's turn it on, and let's make something, right? You're never too old to find one of your loves and make it happen, right? And let me give you some examples of having dreams to do things that you don't think you have the ability to do anymore, or maybe ever. And we'll go after a couple here. Very distinct ones that I see all the time. Let's say you're 5'4" girl and you love basketball. And you're damn good at it when you're in the playground, when you're at middle school or high school. But you know, when you get to college, you're going to have to be 5'10 or higher to play in any college league, because they can find girls way taller than you who are also as good as you, maybe even better. But you love basketball. You love it. You love the sport. Well, there's a million things you can do in basketball for your entire life at 5'4 that will help those people who are 5'10 to 7 feet tall. Plus, you could do a little technique in your little body and teach it to someone who's bigger and say, as long as you can figure out what I'm doing at 5'4, you're going to murder all those people out there on the court. Perhaps you become a coach. Perhaps you become a statistician. You're some aide. Maybe you become a news reporter because you love the statistics and you love reporting who's doing better, and you get behind all the individual players and you're a statistician for the news. I mean, we know that females have utterly dominate at least 50% of sports, because guys who like sports like women, and they like hearing them being very, it's really sexy for sports addicts to have a really sexy woman. You know, forgive the formula, it's not mine. Talk about sports. You know, it's like the woman who likes the guy that knows how to shop for shoes. He's my shopping buddy, right? He's a man and he loves, you know, he knows what the color mauve is, right? There's all kinds of ways you can participate in what you love, even if you can't perceivably be the center of attention. Maybe you look awkward. Maybe you like to eat cake all day. And for whatever reason, music, you know, the record companies just look at you and they go, well, you're not really a leading man in a band. Eh, your voice is okay. But I tell you what, we got a job. We got a job with that, those kind of people that you admire. You can be a road manager. You don't have to look like anything. And you can be as deeply involved in a rock band as you want. You become a sound engineer. You actually get to help make the music. You'll work as a sound engineer. You'll work more on a song than the artists themselves. Right? The artists will come in, do you know, a few 8-hour days singing on a song, and you're going to spend a month to 6 months remixing that song until it's absolutely perfect. And when it goes out and becomes Gundam style, right? Or Gungam style, whatever we call it, you're really the reason why it sounds the way it sounds. You're the reason why it sounds good in a car, and it sounds good on a computer, and it sounds good in concert, because you mixed it. Believe me, there are gold statues for everyone along the way. How many times have you seen the Oscars, and which, you know, is kind of a bullshit award at this point, but you see the Oscars and you're seeing people get awards for things that you don't even know what that was. Trust me, they don't get it because it's completely trivial. They just don't. Now, what are you going to find difficult in the middle of this process? Well, if you're like me, you're going to have a lot of things that you love in this world, so simply picking one over the other means one of them dies, or at least gets put on hold for a little while. And that's sort of a rough process to go through. You're like, Jesus, I really want to write a song. I really want to get back into my guitar, but that's not going to really pay the bills in any significant way unless a miracle happens, especially at my age. And so I'm like, well, okay, I got to pick the one that is equally interesting and it can give me a career for the rest of my life, right? Some of the most interesting people I meet, and this is, again, the way it was on the What's My Line show back in the, from 1950 to 1968, you have a lot of both men and women who invented something, and all they did is make that thing. You know, there's a woman that makes custom saddles here in California, was on the show. On the show, just to give you kind of a perspective of how powerful this can be for your life, they used to give you $50 if you could confuse the panelists as to what your job was. You have to answer yes and no questions, 10 no's, and you win $50. Now, $50 amateurized up for today from 1950 is about $550. And of course, that went down from that to 1968, but it wasn't really about winning the money. It was about having fun on the show. Okay. This woman comes on like 58 or something like that, and she makes saddles. So after she confuses the panel and wins her $50, the host says, okay, you can buy this person's saddles for starting at $2,500. And you're looking at $50, it's $550. A saddle for a horse? And he says it can be a little bit more. I think he said up to $6,000 if you put silver on it and it gets all nicely embroidered into the leather, right? Think about that. This person is earning the purchase price of a house for selling a saddle. Self-made person. Took a love and went with it. That's you. That's you. I know a lot of things have been invented in this world, and you might think, well, there's nothing new that can ever be invented, and that's bullshit. That is so much crap. What you also find in your life, if you're trying to figure out a project, is that if you love something, you're going to know what's missing in that love, right? I love listening to music, and I'll ask you, well, how do you listen to music? Well, yeah, just my phone, whatever, my iPad, iPod, whatever, iPad, computer, home stereo, car stereo. And I'll say, well, what what sucks about that is those things. Well, what do you mean? Well, if you could make them better, I mean, if you could have your fantasy, how would you listen to music? And they start thinking, they start going, well, I guess I wouldn't have to carry around anything all the time, and I could hear music wherever I am. All right. Well, how would you do it? What would it be? And we start talking, you know, and people are like, well, you know, I guess the best thing would be like an implant in your head, and you could just listen to it, or maybe some really light earbud that, you know, lets you hear the outside world just as much as you would normally hear it, but when your music turns on, it balances between music and the outside hearing, like kind of hearing aids that you don't need. All right, why don't you go research that, see if anyone's ever made it. Sometimes what you can do, and there was a really good example of this sort of alternate technique I'm talking about. If you can't be the exact thing that you want to be for whatever physical or mental reason or time reason or whatever. Jeff Bridges made a movie back in the 80s called Tucker. And it was about a car that was invented by this independent car manufacturer, I think in the 30s. And his, like Franklin Tucker, I don't know, I can't remember his first name, but it was something Tucker. And the car was super innovative. It had cool things like if you turn the steering wheel, the lights actually pointed in the direction of the steer, of the tires. And so you always had the light where you were headed so you wouldn't, wreck into something, right? But it had a lot of cool design principles. And his problem was, just like DeLorean, you can't mess with the top three at that time in America because they'll crush you, they'll kill you, they'll frame you for cocaine possession, all kinds of stuff, right? And so in the movie, there's a classic scene, and this happened with Ralph Bakshi, and I'll tell you that story too. Someone in the movie shows up, walks inside the Tucker manufacturing line, and he says, you know, I want to work for you. And, you know, it's Hollywood, so, you know, who knows how the real conversation went. But I can tell you one from Ralph Bakshi that's similar. But the Tucker character goes, what do you mean? And he says, I've seen your car. It's phenomenal. I know how to build cars. And I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to be involved with this Tucker car because I think it's going to blow up. I think it's innovative. It's exactly what I've personally been waiting for. Remember the old analogy I just gave you? Asking somebody, hey, how do you make this better? Well, Tucker had already figured it out, but the guy wanted to help the engineering get all these complexities worked out. And he ends up being a part of the company. Now, the unfortunate eventual history of Tucker was that he was shut down and no one ever bought his designs and ever did anything with him, unfortunately. You might run into those too, but believe me, you'll love the journey along the way. But Ralph Bakshi, if you listen to the narration on top of the movie Wizards, I've talked about this movie a couple times in episodes and outlined everything. I've even outlined this particular example, but we're here now, so let's do it again. Ralph Bakshi was a prodigy artist in New York City. And I mean prodigy. Eventually, he broke away from the studio he was working for, which I think was Warner Brothers, but I can't remember. I think Warner Brothers is in Chicago or something, but he was in, I think, Brooklyn, New York even. But he breaks out and makes his own studio. He starts making little films, Fritz the Cat, Heavy Traffic. I hate making mistakes in episodes. Sucks. He makes Heavy Traffic, and then he makes his movie Wizards. And Wizards is about good versus evil. It's an amazing film. It got him all of his gigs with the J.R. Tolkien franchise because J.R. Tolkien's daughter saw Wizards and said, oh my God, for the very first time, I'm going to go to my father and say, there is an artist that is alive that can handle your book. And if it weren't for him, you wouldn't have Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit out of the 70s, and I think early 80s. But this artist, this woman, walks into the studio because it was sort of back in the 70s where things were kind of open. You could walk into animation studios or any business that's independent and, you know, hang out and learn what's going on. And this woman, and I forget her name, she says, you know, I really want to help make movies with you. I want to become an animator. Now, the way he tells the story, I believe, is that she really didn't have an art background. Isn't that crazy? She just had a pure desire and she felt it in her heart. This is something she needs to go for. And a lot of you, if not all of you, have this moment, okay? I want you to listen to the moment. I want you to take action because of that moment, right? So he's like, okay. What does Ralph do as a logistics guy? He's the director. He's the writer. And this ain't his first rodeo. I can tell you, having been in his position several times, you'd never want to create a dependency with a resource that might fail, and eventually it impacts the overall schedule of the project. In my game company, I had a kid who really wanted to draw Marvel characters for one of our games, and so I looked at the schedule and I said, look, we won't need this art for another month or two, so while I don't need this to work, why don't you take a stab at it? He took a stab at it, and he completely and utterly failed. But then I came in and drew it instead. I didn't want to, but that's just what had to happen. But I didn't injure the project. So what Ralph did was he said, look, we have a lot of demons in this movie. They're goofy. They're not terribly serious, but they're kind of goofy-looking, squashy, weird characters. And he said, why don't you start designing demons? Because we don't need them just yet. And she said, okay. And she starts drawing demons. And she nails the style guide, meaning she nails the goofiness and the comedy that was built into them, because they're kind of stupid, oafy things. And her demons are the ones that are in the movie. And she drew a bunch of them, a ton of them. And he said, this girl turned into one of the best animators I had. She was quick, she was accurate, and she captured the vision that was in my brain that I told her that I wanted her to draw. I don't know where she went in her career, but I guarantee you if she quit, it was on her own schedule. She decided to quit because she had the skills to make it happen. And animation kept going until, geez, like hand animation was still popular clear up until the 21st century, right? There are thousands upon tens of thousands of stories just like that all around the world. If you don't know them, that doesn't mean they didn't exist and they didn't happen. And what does that mean to you? That means that you can do it too. 100%. Now, I did an episode in season one called Time Management. All right? For those of you who are listening to me and you're kind of interested, but there's this little devil on your shoulder and it's saying to you, yeah, you know he's right, but you don't have enough time to do this kind of stuff. Look at your life. There's no time. You got kids, you got a husband, you got a wife, you got a job. Your job's intense. There's no way you can do any of this stuff. That's a lie. And you need to go watch my episode on time management. It sounds sterile, it sounds unexciting, but here's what the time management episode is really about. It is about all those little microseconds that you have to yourself in life. Today, because of cell phones, think about how much social media crap you view, you post, you respond to. And in the end, it's a ton of time throughout a week. And you might think, yeah, well, I need that time to be my time and nothing serious because I need that break from my tension in life. And you're right. You're right. Believe me, I do it too. I have a couple times a day that I unwind. Honestly, these episodes are the first thing I do when I wake up, right? I've been up half an hour before I did this episode, right? I woke up with no clue about what I'm going to do. I just set it up and it comes to me. Boom. Sometimes it's very evident that that's what I'm doing, right? But time management's all about sitting on the pot, driving in your car, having a break when the kids finally go to bed. All those little tiny pockets where you can pull out something that you're interested in. Film writing is very interesting because it's a good archetype for how to get into something when you don't think you have a lot of time. The novice writer, which I had been for 20 years before I finally got trained, became sort of a semi-professional, right? Is you spending a couple years thinking about a script, taking notes, Go see all my episodes on screenwriting. If you're interested in that, I'll share all my secrets with you. The coveted stuff that nobody shares because they don't want anyone else to be in the industry but them. After a couple years, you will have your script completely figured out, top to bottom, front to back. All your acts, all figured out. Your climaxes, your twists, your character development, why people are doing things in your script. And at that point, you get out and double click your screenplay writing software. And that is when you start writing your action, your scene setups, your action, your settings, your dialogue. And it just falls out of you, right? You're going to rewrite the crap out of it after you're done, because until you see it all together, you won't know about other problems you're going to have. Got an episode on that too. But take that analogy for you having very limited time to engage the dream that's in your head right now. Research this thing you want to do when you don't have the time to be a full-time committed person to it. Like for me in electronics, what ended up happening with me is that I said, okay, I need to start just refreshing my mind and upgrading my knowledge, because electronics has advanced since last time I was deeply into it. And I've never been as deeply into it as I am today. So yeah, I will be on Wikipedia. I will have to look up a bunch of acronyms. Companies don't agree on what to call certain things. And so one company calls it one thing. And you know, in the manuals, it's actually got an acronym that's different. But you go to the other company, it makes the same chip, and they have a different acronym. But they mean the same exact thing. So you're going to have to update your brain with all the referential information that you need to know so you can read a schematic anywhere in the world and go, oh, I see you're using Texas Instruments methodology of referencing as opposed to Adafruit's method, right? And the ultimate secret of it all, of any one of the projects that you guys might have in your brain, is it's all easy. It is. You just need to know where to apply these easy steps to get what you want out of life, to get what you need into your project, to get to the next level, the next stage, the next step, right? Break your project down into little tiny steps that look even easier than the next step, you know? It'll all accumulate into something real. And even if at the end you create a big snowball of kind of crap, you know? Like what if my project, I've got this huge pile of circuitry and pile of stuff and it just looks Frankenstein-y in it, but it kind of does what I need it to do, but it's not going to be marketable. The product costs like $800 because I've used a bunch of expensive parts. But at that point, I can start simplifying everything. Well, that doesn't need to be that big. I shouldn't be using breadboards. I should have breakout boards and, you know, make this thing more integrated. I could take all these things and maybe find a company to make me a chip that does all this, or maybe I can find one that's already created to consolidate a bunch of that stuff down to a teeny tiny dot. You know, it goes from costing $100 to costing $3. Instead of running on 5 volts, it runs on 1 volt. Saving myself, you know, the power consumption so that I can tell my people that might be interested in buying what I'm doing, hey, this thing barely, uses two AAA batteries, right? I mean, is it really hard to dip a paintbrush in paint and put it on a surface? No, that's pretty easy. You just got to figure out where it goes. And obviously, the devils are always in the details. The hard stuff is in making it look easy. But that's why you have time to figure it out. My buddy Sid Mead, he paints photographs. I mean, he doesn't look at a photograph and paint it. He paints things out of his brain that are futuristic designs that look like photographs. I mean, his command of light is godly. And one time before I really met him, I thought, man, I'm going to try to paint something like this. And I got a big canvas and I tried to paint a futuristic city scene. Eventually I gave up. Shouldn't have, but I did. I painted a dolphin on top of it instead. And what I realized when I met Sid and I started watching him go through his process, he draws 1,000 to 3,000 sketches of what he's going to put on that canvas. And then he gets a little teeny tiny canvas about this big. I'm holding up my hands about a 10-inch diameter square. And he paints a little tiny version of it first. Gets the light down in his brain. Because, hey, a smaller canvas can only accept a limited amount of paint. It's very easy to correct what you're doing. You can paint over the whole thing in a matter of minutes instead of hours and days. And once he gets the little tiny thumbnail painting done, he does the big one and just uses his little one as a color guide. He also mixes all of his paints for the little one, and he keeps them in containers so they don't dry out. And when he gets the big one, he's got all of his paints already figured out. Right? He broke it down to little steps. This is how Art Center in Pasadena will teach you how to draw. They also teach you the mechanism to have an assembly line of your work, right? If you're working on Monday on Project A, the entire time you're working on Project A from Monday through Friday, with the deadline on Friday, you're thinking about Project B in your brain the whole time. How are you going to do Project B that's next week? Creating an assembly line in your brain, making you more of a multitasker, right? For those of you who have the desire and you have this void in you that needs to get filled, get yourself a project. Get yourself a project. Don't worry about what you've done in the past. It doesn't matter. The past is the past. You live in the now. Don't brag to me about what you've done in the past. I don't give a shit. Show me what you're doing right now. Get back into it. Have faith in yourself, because the universe does. And again, you're never alone. The universe is always there. If you invest in yourself, the universe will invest in you. Again, you can't get the guitar solo out of the ether of the universe if you don't buy the guitar and practice. You can think about it all you want. Oh, I can just imagine myself getting on stage and tearing up the guitar or whatever it is, right? Well, it ain't never going to happen if you don't buy the guitar, right? It's like the old joke about the blonde that keeps asking God every single night to help her win the lottery. She prays and prays and prays. And eventually God puts his head down into her room and she's praying at her bedside and he says, buy a ticket, right? You got to buy the ticket, people. Get yourself in the game. There are no rules when you're by yourself, right? You run your show. You can go slow, you can go fast. As long as some progress is happening inside your brain, you're on your way. So get out and do it. Any of you have experienced this, share it in the comments, please. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's audio, video, a locked Facebook group, and Patreon. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.